people who love them.
Hello and welcome. This is The Thing About Cars, recording as always in Strongbox West in the beautiful city of Atlanta, Georgia. Today around the table we've got
Ben,
Bodie,
Becca,
and I'm Mickey. Thank you for joining us. We have an interesting agenda in front of us today, but before we jump into that agenda, I want to read our grand trivia auto question for the day. You guys ready?
Yeah.
Ready.
All right. As plans for the production of this vehicle were being formulated in 1955, which car was codenamed the E-Car? Was it the Edsel, the Erskine, the L-Car, or the Elgin? That seems like a pretty straightforward answer, but let's think about that for a minute. It might not be as obvious as we imagine. So was it the Edsel, the Erskine, the Elker, or the Elgin? Which one was the E-Car, which began production, was being formulated in 1955? So we'll come back to that at the end of the show. In the meantime, the first thing on our agenda, I think this one's Becca's Camaros.
Yes, we had mentioned previously on an earlier episode about the Camaro being discontinued again. They are not being discontinued. They are delayed in production.
Okay.
But they, according to one place that I had read, they are not planning on canceling them again. There is no plans in the works, according to this one source. I was up at my friend Max's garage not too long ago, and his one of the people that worked there, we were in a conversation about all of our GM products, and I brought that up, and he said absolutely not. So I went back and started digging again. They are not planning on canceling Camaro, but I don't know if it's this year or where exactly the delay is and how much the delay is, but they're not.
It makes total sense, because I just read something, I think, honestly, yesterday, that GM trucks have fallen to the third spot, and it's largely because of production not being able to make their quotas and get the vehicles out there fast enough, and because they've shut down a lot of plants, I believe. And
so the issue is not demand, it is supply.
I believe so.
Or production abilities,
Interesting. So Chevy seems to have shot themselves in the foot by turning down production.
That I don't know.
So far, with the two stories that I have now, it seems that way to me.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, could be.
Huh.
But, I mean, you know, I think they're going to be okay.
Sure, yeah.
It is Chevy. Well, I mean, I'm kind of glad that the Camaro is not quite going away, although the car itself does leave a little bit to be desired.
It needs a restyle. It bad. And so does the Challenger, you know. Come on, move on, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I appreciate, you know, a nod to the retro look and the retro feel of things. But in the Camaro's case in particular, it's like it just seems to be lacking so much that I would like to see in it.
I am not a Mustang guy at all, but I got to give props. That new Mustang is fantastic.
Oh,
I love that thing.
Yeah.
And you mean tell me that both Chevy and Dodge is sitting back going, oh, no, it's okay. You know, ours are still really awesome, you know.
Well, I don't like it when people constantly go back to the drawing board with styles, because there's certain elements that are just iconic to a certain car, especially some with the longevity of Mustang and Camaro and, you know, Corvette. You don't want to just get rid of everything that is that car.
But they've done it before. I mean, I'm not saying that doing that is a good thing or not, but, you know, how many different Camaro body styles have there been? How many different Mustang body styles have there been?
Not as many as some manufacturers, and I will say I'm not incredibly enthusiastic about the newish Mustang, but like always, it takes a while for me to get used to something.
You don't like the new Mustang?
Yeah. Let's go back to that for a minute.
Yeah. Back up.
I've always done that. The one that I have now, I had been driving my 92, which, you know, is a Fox chassis, and Foxes had been around since 79 up to 93. It was a huge shock when the S197s came out, and I hated it. But the interior reminded me of the Batmobile.
Well, yeah,
with those humps.
Remember,
in
you
the
had
front?
Good reason to hate that one. That was the Barbie Mustang. That was that was right there. It was second to
me?
Pinto Mustang.
No. I are stepping outside. I'm sorry. We need to pause here so I can take him outside and look. I'm wearing my boots, so I'm gonna take you out.
No, hang on now, but. So what is it about the new Mustang that's not a good idea? A non-Mustang lover just said he liked it.
Well, I didn't say that it's not a... Well, that's just it. A non-Mustang driver liked it, okay? So it's something that it is off for the people that are used to other Mustang things. I'm not saying it's terrible. I'm just saying...
Mm-hmm.
I know what they've done... Well, of course, the independent rear suspension has... been a long time coming.
They tried it before and there were issues there. That should be a trivia. Most people think that Mustangs never had IRS.
But I think we're of course the style of it, but that's an opinion. The style of it is fantastic to me. But where I think is fact is Ford really just took a huge step forward with their turbo four cylinders and V6s.
Sorry.
And I mean, I love my Hemis and V8s in general, but hey, man, they're killing it and they're way ahead of their competition in that regard. I mean, BMW's been doing it for years and years and years with their six cylinders producing some serious performance. And finally, we got an American manufacturer that's taken their time with a six cylinder.
Mm-hmm. I've driven a few Mustangs on my business trips lately, and these are the Turbo 4 convertibles, and oh yeah, sweet little car. Really enjoyed them. I drove one from Miami to Atlanta with the top down the whole way.
Yeah. And the little four banger that is in the Mustangs now, isn't it like 310 horsepower?
Yeah, and you can have more too. It's,
well, it's,
you know,
the EcoBoost.
And it's exactly what you were saying. Most people don't know what to do with anything more than 310 horsepower anyways.
Right. Yeah.
That's a fantastic, I mean, that, you'll be able to boil the tires off of that. Whip it around into a small parking lot, you know.
I wouldn't and be caught
factory,
dead in one of those things.
There's also a factory performance package available for it. So yeah, you know, the rental one had an automatic transmission, which is, I think, a $3,000 option. I said, like, save that and get that performance package on the engine, you know, with the manual gearbox and, you know.
Exactly.
Oh, okay. Have fun.
I've got something pulled up here. I would like to show Bodie, you know, my soulmate here, the love of my life. Talk smack about the SN95 again.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I thought you were saying you didn't like him.
I said at first.
What?
At first.
At first, because I had to get used to it.
But then you got hypnotized and...
Oh, there's a story. There's a story. But she and I just had our 20th anniversary back in April, and I'm
Let's
feeling
see this
hostile.
Picture, Becca. What's it?
It's just the one from the Mustang room that's up top that was easiest to get to, where she's sitting over in the corner.
Right.
I put baby in the corner.
That's the jelly bean era Mustang.
But see, Becca likes muscle. Becca likes lots of muscle, even though we're sitting here extolling the virtues of a turbo powered four.
But I like
or
the
beefed
raw
up V6.
Horsepower.
Becca likes raw 8-cylinder.
Right,
rumbling.
The displacement.
Well, I mean,
the
that thing only had about 215.
Stock. Do you think she's stock after 20 years?
Explain, please. I would love to hear this. What have you done to the... I'm assuming it's a 4.6, right?
Yeah, she's got the 4.6 in it. I don't even know if I could ramble through everything or future plans. No, I'll go for it later, honestly. Now I was trying to remember something else.
And I know what you got. Underdrive pulleys, exhaust.
You totally derailed my train of thought there, though. I was going to say something else.
Oh, great.
But yes, I do. I had underdrive pulleys. I did remove the alternator underdrive pulley, but that's only because I've got a higher power alternator I'm going to put on, and then I'll put the underdrive pulley back on that one. Just because age and everything else, they draw more power as they get older. Eventually, the entire electrical system will be replaced. But for now, the higher alternator. Yes, I have my Flowmasters, my two-chamber American Thunder, what was it, the 400 series, I think. No, 40 series, sorry, too many zeros. The 40 series, the loud one. I've got something Max likes to show off because you never see it. The SN95, they made it more challenging to adjust the timing on the car. but I have something installed called a Steeda timing adjuster, and they don't even sell those anymore. I've got the Diablo Sport Chip. I've got the Superior Shift Kit. I've got the 373 rear diff. And normally the notion was you have a GT, you go with the 373, and the Cobras, you take the 410. And the 373 was fun for a while, but I really wish I dropped a 410 in there. Just trying to remember off the top of my head all the things, you know, over 20 years or what I've got in store, it's challenging, but.
See, I don't have a problem with that. I mean, there's a part of me that understands the romance of a big rumbling 8-cylinder, but if a 4-cylinder turbocharged engine can produce 310, that's all you really should have in a convertible anyway, at least for the average driver, I think.
Well, it's like looking at athletes. If somebody has worked hard and has big muscles and can lift something versus someone who's been doing steroids and can lift the same thing. It's a kind of a way of putting it. I've always referred to one as steroids over muscle.
Legit. There is no replacement for displacement.
And I love that saying. I understand it doesn't really hold water the way it used to. But
that may be the show title right there. There is no replacement for displacement.
Right. Yeah. But I'm very old school with things. Yeah. So I like it when it's the machine making the power, not, hey, check out this computer program that makes my car do this. It's not exciting to me.
But if you put them next to each other on a track.
Exactly. Yeah, they can do the same thing.
I am 100%. I love whenever people love what they love. But to me, it comes back to motorcycles, and you have the guy who loves Harley Davidson. Mm-hmm. That's great. Go for it. But please don't argue with me and try and tell me that it's actually a superior machine to any of the big four Japanese brands and a lot of the European brands as well. If you like that, you like that, and that's cool. You know, you like your Mustang, that's cool. But unless you have opened up that 4.6 in its state whenever it was introduced into the 90s, it probably could not even hold a candle to this new 4-cylinder, you know.
And as I have long said, and nobody ever seems to get it, I don't care if she's got 3 tires and 1 door. I will find that car more exciting than anything else. And it's not about some teenage boy, look, I can race you on the street and get you faster.
And I've always liked the spark I feel with
these cars.
If anybody out there has a Mustang with 3 tires and 1 door, please send it to Becca.
No, that's not what, of course I could probably fix it.
Yes. Let's move on with our agenda.
I think
here.
You're missing what I'm saying, though.
No, I completely get what you're
saying. It's for love of the car. I don't care if somebody's
fun
better.
Fun comes in all kinds of flavors.
Oh, yeah.
There's a flavor for everyone.
Well, I catch myself sometimes, too. Like, I'll see these weird decorated cars running down the street, and I'm like, I have this initial visceral knee-jerk reaction that'll make me say things like, now, why would you do that to a perfectly good car? And then in the next sentence, I realized, no, I can't throw that kind of shade on that person,
right?
Because they love what they love. It has made them happy. Who am I to argue with that?
Right.
So, you know,
personal expression through cars, right. You know,
that's right.
But it's still fun to laugh at for half a second.
For
at
half
least.
A second. You're like, oh, my God. All right. So next thing on the agenda, Mahindra Roxar looks a lot like what does it look like, Bodhi?
The old Willys Jeeps.
Yeah.
I had pulled them up and looks amazingly like a Jeep, yes. But the first thought, these pictures that popped up, was that a Jeep and a golf cart had a baby. Because of the raised roof line on it.
Right, and there's specific reasons for that.
Well, it looks very much, somebody was wearing tall hats?
No. They couldn't pass the safety regulations for a modern vehicle. Literally, Mahindra has been building these Jeeps for decades. They were in a partnership, not really a partnership, more of an agreement with, I think it went all the way back to Willys, but it may have started with Kaiser Jeep. And anyways, they were allowed to make these vehicles, and they literally just copied them completely.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years, they updated them a little bit along with like the AMC Jeep and everything. And but they are so close in their lineage that you can order many of the parts from the old CJ5s.
No kidding.
And like axle bearings. The actual rear front and rear differentials, the Dana, I believe it was Dana 30. Mm. But they are a modern old Jeep.
A modern,
but because they couldn't get it street legal, they are they have marketed it as a side-by-side.
Huh.
And so it's being sold as off-road only, but people all over the country are getting them and turning them into...
all over the U.S., you mean?
Yes. Huh. Yeah, all over the U.S. They're getting it, and they're making them roadworthy. And literally, you're getting a brand new, say, 1970 CJ5.
Yeah.
That's got just a little bit of an extended bed on it, and it's got a turbo diesel tractor engine.
No kidding.
Which is awesome.
Man, it makes me want one, actually.
Well, what I'm thinking, though... I mean, obviously, I'm just going by pictures, but it almost looks like the raised roof line is because these Jeeps are smaller than they appear to be.
No. What it is they need to have room for people with helmets.
Mm. Well, so there's my joke about the hats. Well, it almost looks like once you put a person in there and their head is all the way up to that roof line, it almost makes me think that they're smaller than
the old
Jeeps we know.
Were tiny. Yeah. The old Jeeps were
I've seen
tiny
one TV
things.
Ad for these things, and they looked small enough that my first thought was, okay, that's one of these little farm side-by-sides with classic styling.
So. Right, exactly.
But it's a full boxed frame and everything. The Jeep suspension parts work on it, everything.
So I have a couple things to ask, and I guess the first is not even a question. It's sort of an observation. I think a lot of people don't know exactly how big Mahindra Motors actually is.
Well, it's huge.
And they're freaking huge. They are... They are bigger in India than probably, I'm trying to think of an American equivalent. Anyway, they are huge.
Their own boast is that they're the largest tractor manufacturer on the planet.
Right.
And I don't know if that's true or not, but they say it is.
I believe it.
But they're really big, and they also make passenger vehicles as well. And this Jeep is sold in countries all over the world. As an actual daily driver, regular vehicle. It's only here because of our safety regulations. Boo. that you can't straight from the factory get it on the road.
So it's being sold as a side-by-side here, but you say people are buying them and converting them to road use?
Absolutely. It's basically a legal way to do a title wash.
Ah.
And so many states, you don't need a title to register it. So as long as it meets the criteria... They give you a title in that state, and then you then take that title and put it in use in any state that you're in. You know, Georgia's really bad about their whole titles.
Mentioned that before, that transferring a title from state to state, but the non-transferable codes tends to wash it. I've mentioned that, yeah.
But it actually, as far as the 50 state policies, what we're looking at is it meets all the regulations, like the width and length that a vehicle minimum. It's there. It's good. You know, I mean, geez, look at the Suzuki Samurai. You know, talk about a tiny vehicle.
Right.
Or the smart car.
Oh God!
Take that smart off and just put squish on there.
I gotta defend the smart car at least a little bit.
I want to see you climb into a smart car.
He would fit.
I could probably just tuck one under my arm and walk down the street.
I want to see you and Ben both.
We would fit. The elbow room might be a little close, but we would fit.
And I enjoy being that close to Ben, so it's okay.
No, I really want to see this.
My brother is okay. So the listeners can't see this. Mickey and I are about the same height. He's a little heavier than I am.
A little is nice.
How tall you are, though.
We're about 6'4", and my brother is about my height and a little heavier than me too. And he and I have been in a smart car together for many miles. Our stepmom bought one about 10 years ago, and I put a few thousand miles on it. It's got lots of headroom, lots of legroom. It's a little narrow, but.
So
it's got space.
The defense that I have to give to the smart car is there's this meme traveling around the internet that says, this smart car hit a squirrel. And you're looking
I was hoping you were going to say that, but I love that one.
And you're looking at this, what looks like a destroyed smart car. But the first thing I'm going to point out is, never mind the exaggeration, right? Never mind the hyperbole. That smart car, the cage is still intact.
Yeah.
If that car hit a water buffalo, looking at the way that it looked, everyone in that car walked away.
Well,
and I've seen the test that picture came from.
Oh.
They actually ran it into a concrete barrier at 70 miles an hour.
Holy mackerel.
Oh, one of the test runs.
Yeah. It's a remarkably safe, sturdy little car. The reason they made the body that shape is, you know, that old saw about how a sphere is the strongest shape in nature. that's as close as they could get a car to being spherical.
But
and I've seen the body structure cut apart in a dealer showroom, and there's some stuff in there.
Yeah, it's a stout little car.
Yeah.
But I had mentioned it way back when I saw an accident involving a smart car, and there was something like an Explorer, and then the smart car, and then something like a F-150 in the back, and the only person not walking away was the smart car driver. They were letting her into the ambulance, so she got squished. How much damage the car took, I don't know, because they hadn't moved the vehicle, so it was hard to tell there was a car in between the SUV and the truck.
But there's always going to be those statistical outliers as well, right?
Yeah. So we don't know a lot of the variables at play.
My only beef with the smart car is everything that it's good at, aside from being very small. Size does matter. You can get that in other vehicles of normal size.
Oh, absolutely,
You know, it doesn't get particularly good gas mileage. No. It's not particularly inexpensive. It's just real small.
It's just small. That's it.
It's just small.
Well, it was designed to be, you know, easily parked in close urban environments. Wait,
and my wife's from Berlin.
Yeah.
And if we drive over there in Berlin, which we basically don't do ever.
Right.
But if it happens, a smart car would be brilliant.
Yeah,
it's a genius car.
It's designed to be able to nose into a space that a bigger car would parallel park in. You can actually put two of them parallel, you know,
so do you think,
perpendicular to the curb in a parking space.
Do you think Becca would like a smart car if we fitted one with an LS?
That's me banging my head on the microphone.
Why is the LS such a popular transplant engine?
Well, I understand what everybody says about it and why it's so popular and that they're cheap. So when they fall apart, they're easier to replace, that you can produce a lot of horsepower, blah, blah, blah. I know all the positives. It's just tired.
I got it.
And it's been done. It is no longer interesting. It's like, you know, Picasso painted a painting and it was great, and then 50,000 people went out and painted the exact same thing. It's no longer fascinating, new, inventive, a work of art. It is done.
But we're not talking about a Picasso. We're talking about a non-feeling lump of metal and circuitry that burns fuel.
Are you suggesting that the paintings feel?
No. Are you suggesting that engines feel?
No, you did. You said it was a non-feeling. So I'm just saying that cars are a work of art. They are a labor of love that people should be putting thought in.
But if what you want is horsepower coming out on the rear wheels on that thing, then and if you have a tried and true blueprinted means of getting that to happen, why does an engine need to be innovative and not tired in order to do that well?
Because everybody's doing the same thing. Do something different. Do something exciting. Stop making every car a Honda. Have different things to pick from. It's
they should have stopped with the Fox body then.
Why?
Because
I don't understand that you keep jumping over these different tracks.
Because the new stuff, you have criticized the new stuff.
Yes.
So they should the have. I said it takes a while to get used
a
to
lot.
The new.
Ben is like,
No, I completely
No, no, no. I keep arguing that it's up or down. And then he's like, blue. Okay, blue. Let's follow the path of blue. And I say, okay, light blue versus dark blue. No, 42. And it's the train of thought. You're jumping so wildly. It's like, what?
This is the part of the. This is our step one of our plan to drive Becca completely mad.
Oh, I'm already there.
No, I'm with you completely. I'm tired of it as well. But you know what? I've been tired of it since the mid-80s. Because ever since, what was it, 1957, I think? 55? Whenever Chevy came out with their small block V8. They have been the best platform. And we're done. And you know, I'm tired of it because everybody's got it. And that's part of the reason why I don't care for Mustangs is because there's so many. You're right. I'm tired of it too. But it's the cheapest, easiest, best performing option in all in one little package. You know, the Ford Coyote engine is an excellent engine, but that stinking thing's got valves and cams out the wazoo on top of it, and it's huge. You know, and so you can't fit it into a lot of these old cars.
What'd you just say, Becca?
And no throttle cable. I like cables. No, obviously the listeners are probably pretty well aware. I don't know if you are or not about my adventures with my LS. And every time you say the best performing and this and that, I have to snort because it is my LS that is constantly dead in the water. And it is my modular Mustang that
it's been the bane of her existence lately.
Yeah. Has never lately. It's been holding up the garage for almost 2 years. You can't find parts. So cars being every direction is a good thing. It's easier to find parts even after something's been discontinued, the large market that's out there. It's fun to have something that's unique, but makes it epically difficult to work on later or repair, just keep it going. It just...
Your LS is unique?
I have a Pontiac G8.
Hold up.
Oh, so you've got...
Yeah. See?
Oh, you've got a...
I've got a Holden.
You've got the front wheel drive.
No. Back pedal. I don't own front wheel drive cars.
This is a topic for another day because we could spend all day talking about Becca's Holden
woes. Or them driving me crazy.
We have one more thing to talk about today, and I think this one's a pretty big one, so I want to give it at least more than a few minutes of time. Or maybe we can wrap it up quickly. I don't know. Is ethanol bad for your engine? Or is gas with ethanol in it bad for your engine?
Yes. Depends on the engine.
I with Bodie though. I think it's yes.
It's a hard yes for me. Mm-hmm. You know.
Well, at the end of the day, I don't know. Maybe you know any specifics or technicalities behind it. I don't know the ins and outs. I know the Pontiac when it's working, the ethanol drives her nuts. You can feel it. I have to actually put an additive for ethanol that helps remove.
Well, Ben said it depends on the engine. Could you please explain?
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of modern ones are made to deal with it.
But isn't ethanol, even with the modern engine, still sort of a high-maintenance proposition?
Not necessarily.
No?
Yeah, it depends on what the internal components are made of. You know, certain rubbers and, you know, hoses, seals, things like that. You know, some deal with it better than others. And a lot of modern mass-produced cars are completely specced to handle it because it's the reality.
And he's right.
Mm-hmm.
He's right. But you take that same vehicle and run regular gasoline through it exclusively, those rubber parts will still last longer.
Yeah.
So yeah, we've been making them. It's been, what is it? It's like mandatory since 2007.
Because new cars aren't made to go forever either.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it was 2007 whenever it actually became mandatory all manufacturers had to build, you know, according to, hey, this car's going to have ethanol ran through it. Mm-hmm. But it's still the plastic after 10 years. You know, it gets brittle, things happen, and they may not be happening if it was just regular gasoline.
Well, maybe they don't have ethanol in Australia or something. I don't know. My Pontiac, which is not a Pontiac, does not. She has a fit.
Yeah.
So is there an age of car that we should be looking at that's more ethanol, that's more friendly to ethanol than not?
Well, anything, I think it's 2007 and up. And, you know.
And depending on what you've got, some older things can be retrofitted. You can get a lot of rebuild kits for older carburetors that now have ethanol-resistant parts.
Hmm.
Like a lot of old carb floats did not deal well with ethanol, but now they're making the floats have a different plastic that handles it better.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if maybe you were thinking about the G6 or something. This is the G8.
I know.
Becca's still talking about her.
So that took front over wheel. From the GTO. That's the GTO platform?
It might be.
I'm busy giving him the side eye.
Well, do you know or you just want to give me the side eye?
Ish.
Because I'm pretty sure it's the GTO platform exclusively. Ish. They just changed some body panels and stuff like that.
No. It's the Holden Commodore is what this car is.
Which is the GTO.
Ish.
No, that's straight
I'm
up.
Not... Man. Well, they all come from gentlemen. from Detroit, so they're the same platform, right? Okay, but I don't know if anybody heard me grunt in the background. I'm kind of sad because this is actually my car. Look,
but how is that unique?
But... this one is for sale right now for $29,900, and I'm thinking, good God, if only my car would run and I could sell it for that kind of money.
Why don't you just sell it for parts and get rid of it, Becca, and find something else?
I can't do that. I love her. And
what's wrong with it?
I don't want her to be cut up for parts. Oh, what's wrong with her? That could take a whole other long
You've got this thing that's been a paperweight in your garage for 2 years. Just get rid of it. It's a liability. If you're not driving it.
It's not a liability. It's not going to run over anybody. It's not going to catch on fire.
It's going to break. It's going to sit there and degrade.
It's been broken.
It's going to sit there and degrade and broke down and leak crap all over your garage floor.
So all these barn finds are a horrible thing to you? Those
cars
that sat
there? Do you want your car to be regarded as a barn find?
Well, right now it's a garage find. Well, why not? You find cars that have been sitting in a barn for 50 years. You're like, oh my God, that's fabulous. That's
so
amazing.
To our listeners, we're going to wrap this episode here. And if you have a way for Becca to fix her poor Holden, please let her know.
It's going to be to swap it. I know.
Yeah, we're going to have to do a swap. You should put that big marine engine in it.
Ooh. No, that's right. That guy was talking about that awesome marine engine. Yeah. Yes.
Thank you, as always, to our guests for joining us. Bodie,
hang on.
Thanks for being... Oh, I'm sorry, Ben.
Don't we have a trivia question?
Right. Yeah. Thank you for reminding me. I always tend to forget that. Grand Trivia Auto. The question was, as plans for the production of this vehicle were being formulated in 1955, which car was codenamed the E-Car? Was it the Elgin, the L-Car, the Erickson, or the Edsel? Seems pretty straightforward to me, but I'm not really sure. Bodie, what's your guess?
The only one that I know of that's an actual car is the Edsel. Mm-hmm. And the 57, 58, they came out.
I think that's right.
So it would make sense. So yeah. I'm going with Edsel.
Well, the Elgin was a car, but I don't remember much more about it.
So what's your answer, Becca?
I'll go that way. Why not?
Edsel or Elgin?
I'll go with Elgin. Why not?
You go with Elgin?
For giggles.
Sure. I'm going to go with Edsel just because it's the only one I know anything about. So.
That's what I was going to say. Everyone here is going to pick Edsel because it's the one name we all recognize.
Except for Becca.
Except for Becca. Here's the answer. The answer is the E originally stood for experimental. However, the Ford company eventually decided to honor Henry Ford's son, Edsel, and named the vehicle after him. So the answer is Edsel. It was introduced on E-Day, September 4, 1957. Over 68,000 cars were sold in the United States and Canada its first year. By 1960, however, only about 84,000 total had been sold in the next 3 years. So the sales rate just plummeted. In today's dollar values, I take that back. In 2013 dollar values, that means the company lost an equivalent of about $2 billion, close to $3 billion. So $2.7 billion.
That's what you get when you make a car that looks like a fish with its mouth wide open.
I don't know. It had a little bit of a charm. And
Yeah. It was a great car in a lot of ways, but people just couldn't get over that styling.
We got anything else for our listeners before we sign out?
I don't think so.
Well, thank you, Bodie, for joining us at the table.
I have enjoyed it.
It's been fun. We should definitely do this again.
Yeah.
And to our listeners, Ben, is okay for me to end the episode now?
Yeah. Yeah, we've got our Trivial Matters out of the way.
Trivial Matters out of the way. Thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, please support us via our Patreon page, patreon.com/thethingaboutcars. And you can always communicate with us via our website, thethingaboutcars.com. Please send us your questions, your ideas, your comments, your criticisms. We love hearing from you. And as always, be safe out there. We'll see you in about a week.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.